We furthermore warn you that if you make any surprise, hostile move against the liberated zone of California, we will immediately detonate more than 500 nuclear devices, which have already been hidden in key target areas throughout the United States. More than 40 of these devices are now located in the New York City area. In addition, we will immediately use all the nuclear missiles still available to us to destroy the Jewish presence in Palestine. Finally, we warn you that, in any event, we intend to liberate first the entire United States and then the remainder of this planet. When we have done so, we will liquidate all the enemies of our people, including, in particular, all white persons who have consciously aided those enemies. We are aware now, and we will continue to be aware, of your most confidential plans and of every order you receive from your Jewish masters. Abandon your race treason now, or abandon all hope for yourselves when you fall into the hands of the people you have betrayed. At this point is inserted an editorial note to the reader. Turner's version of the organization's ultimatum is essentially correct, except for a few minor errors in wording and his omission of one sentence from the next-to-last paragraph. The full and exact text of the ultimatum is in Chapter 9 of Professor Anderson's definitive History of the Great Revolution. Here, Earl Turner's text resumes. We had pulled off the road when the special announcer came on, and it took us a few minutes to gather our thoughts and decide what to do. We had not really expected things to develop so rapidly. Those fellows who took the warheads to Miami and Charleston must have either left a day or two ahead of us, or they must have really been burning up the highways to get there so soon. Despite our non-stop driving, we felt like a bunch of shirkers. We knew the fat was really in the fire. We were in the middle of a nuclear civil war, and within the next few days, the fate of the planet would be decided for all time. Now it was either the Jews or the white race, and everyone knew the game was for keeps. I still haven't figured out all the details of our strategy leading up to the ultimatum. I don't know why, for example, Miami and Charleston were chosen as initial targets, although I've heard a rumor that the rich Jews who were evacuated from New York were being temporarily housed in the Charleston area, and Miami, of course, already had a superabundance of Jews. But why not take out the New York City area instead, with its 2.5 megakikes? Perhaps our bombs weren't really in place yet in New York, despite what our ultimatum said. And I'm also not sure why our ultimatum took the particular form it did, all stick and no carrot. Perhaps it was deliberately intended to stampede the cattle, which indeed it has. Or perhaps there were some under-the-table communications between Revolutionary Command and the system's military leaders which determined the form of the ultimatum. In any event, it has had the effect of splitting the system right down the middle. The Jews and nearly all the politicians are in one faction, and nearly all the military leaders are in another faction. The Jewish faction is demanding the immediate nuclear annihilation of California, regardless of the consequences. The accursed Goyim have raised their hands against the chosen people and must be destroyed at any cost. The military faction, on the other hand, is in favor of a temporary truce while an effort is made to find our 500, a forgivable exaggeration, nuclear devices, and disarm them. After hearing that broadcast, our only thought was to get our deadly cargo to Washington as soon as possible. We knew everyone would be off balance for a while as a result of what had just happened, and we decided to take advantage of the general confusion by converting our truck into an emergency vehicle and barreling straight down the highway toward our destination. We didn't have a siren, but we did have flashing red lights front and rear, and we completed the conversion a few minutes later by stopping in a rural hardware store and buying some cans of spray paint, which, with some hastily improvised stencils made from torn newspapers, we used to paint Red Cross symbols in the appropriate places on our truck. After that, we made Washington in less than 20 hours, despite the chaotic conditions on the highways. We sped along shoulders to get past stalled traffic, drove on the wrong side of the road with horn blaring and lights flashing, bounced over culverts and open fields to get around blocked intersections, and generally ignored all traffic controllers, bluffing our way through more than a dozen checkpoints. Our first bomb went into Fort Belvoir, the big army base just south of Washington, where I was locked up for more than a year. We had to wait 2 maddening days to make contact with our inside man there, so we could arrange to get the bomb inside the base and hidden in the right area. Rodriguez went over the fence with the bomb strapped on his back. I received a radio signal from him the next day, confirming the successful completion of his mission. Meanwhile, the rest of us planted a second bomb in the District of Columbia, where it will be able to take out a couple of 100,000 blacks when it goes, not to mention a few government agencies, and a critical portion of the Capitol's transportation network. I didn't have my final orders on the third bomb until this afternoon. That will go into the Silver Spring area north of here, the center of the Maryland suburban Jewish community. The fourth one is intended for the Pentagon, but security is so tight there, I still haven't figured a way to get it anywhere near the place. I must confess that my mind has not been entirely on my work since I've been back here. Catherine and I have stolen time from our organization responsibilities to be together. Neither of us had realized how much we have come to mean to each other until we were separated again this summer, so soon after my escape from prison. In the month we were together this spring, before I was sent to Texas, and then to Colorado, and finally to California, we became as close as any two people can possibly be. Things have been hard for Catherine and the others here while I was gone, especially since July 4th. They have been under enormous pressure from two directions. The organization has been pushing them without mercy to continually step up their level of activism, while the danger of being caught by the political police has grown worse every week. The system is resorting to new methods in its fight against us. Massive house-to-house searches of multi-block areas, astronomical rewards for informers, much tighter controls on all civilian movement. In many other parts of the country, these repressive measures have been more sporadic,